And it's Thursday. So, Jeremy, we are on Pavlovian, like pins and needles, waiting for Supreme Court decision. Oh, wait. No, we're not.
Term's over.
Term is over. And what a term it was. Landmark decisions upholding the Affordable Care Act, permitting same-sex marriage nationwide, making it much more difficult to challenge the use of lethal injections in executions.
And next term is shaping up to be just as interesting. NPR's Nina Totenberg covers the Supreme Court, as we all know, and does it so well. She's with us right now. Hi, Nina.
Hi, guys.
And all the commentary so far has been focused on all these victories for liberal justices on the court. How many were there?
Well, the liberals won 19 out of the 26 ideologically close cases and 8 out of the 10 biggest ones. This is the best term for the left in, I think you'd have to say, a quarter century. And by left, I mean the left now, which is a sort of center left. It's not the left of 50 years ago or 40 years ago.
Yeah.
We've heard about this court becoming more conservative. So what you're saying is that maybe that's not the case. It is swinging to the left.
You know, I do not think it's swinging to the left. I just think that the way particular turns come out depends in large measure on the mix of cases that come to the court. And it just so happens that the cases that came to the court this term were the ones that the liberals were able to win. And if you look at the next term, when we have affirmative action in higher education coming back, and all kinds of cases that have the potential of there's a case involved that could completely undo unions in the public sector, for example. There are all kinds of those sorts of cases coming up. Abortion is likely to come before the court again. Those are cases in which one suspects that the liberals will end up with considerably less than they have now. One can never be sure. But that's my guess.
Yeah. Well, Nina, can we talk for a minute about Justice Scalia's language, if we can? Words like applesauce and jiggery-pokery, we talked about that here on the program. But also, outside of just words, it seemed like real disdain for some of the decisions in his dissents, saying, for instance, in the same-sex marriage dissent, that he was concerned about who rules over me, you know, with a capital R on rules, seeming to question if the other justices were acting like deities. What do you make of that? You know dissents more broadly. So how does this fit in, this language and the tone?
Well, I think Justice Scalia's dissenting language is always extremely colorful. And all of the justices from time to time are, to put it euphemistically, firm. Scalia, but this year I think Scalia outdid himself. There was a footnote in the same-sex marriage case. If, even as a price to be paid for a fifth vote, I ever joined an opinion for the court with the kind of vague language that was in Justice Kennedy's soaring passages of the opening his decision, he said, if I ever did that, I would hide my head in a bag. The Supreme Court of the United States has descended from the disciplined legal reasoning of John Marshall and Joseph Story to the mystical aphorisms of the fortune cookie.
The fortune cookie, that's right.
And he called in the lethal injection case, which, after all, the conservatives won that case. He had a rebuttal, even a rebuttal from the bench, to Justice Breyer's dissenting opinion, calling it gobbledygook.
Right.
And in the Obamacare case, he said that the court's opinion, which was a 6-3 opinion, amounted to SCOTUS care, SCOTUS being Supreme Court of the United States.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the only one. I mean, Chief Justice Roberts, dissenting in the decision upholding the independent redistricting commissions, referred to the founding fathers, if the interpretation that the majority put on the word legislature had been true, then the founding fathers would have been chumps, he said, because they used the word legislature as distinct from the people. And Justice Kagan had great fun with a very, very boring patent case that happened to involve a Spider-Man toy, and that prompted her to echo Peter Parker's Uncle Ben by declaring for the court that in this case, with great power, there must also come great responsibility.
I'm so glad, by the way, that you brought up gobbledygook, because we did learn last week on the program that that word came from the Maverick family of San Antonio, Texas.
The real Maverick.
And Congressman Mari Maverick, who coined the term gobbledygook. But anyway, Robin, continue.
Yes. Well, but what do we read from all of this, Nina? Is it just that, you know, these are people who've been together for a long time. Anyone looking around their office space might be thinking, yes, it gets, you know, tensions just rise between coworkers if it's been a long time. What do you make of this language?
I don't think that there is anything all that distinctive about it, except perhaps Scalia being more colorful even than usual. They will now go off for the summer. They'll lick their wounds. They'll enjoy their brief victories where they had them, and then they'll come back, and they'll still be friends.
Yeah. Okay.
Because they have to be.
Right.
They are there for the rest of their lives.
They're yoked together. Right.
They're
right.
Yoked together. This is like a dysfunctional marriage where there's no divorce.
What about Chief Justice Roberts, Nina? What do you think of his legacy so far as Chief Justice?
Well, it's very hard to tell at this term. He's been Chief Justice now for 10 years, which is a fairly long time. And it's clear that he, along with Justice Kennedy, have a different view of conservatism than the other three conservatives on the court, Justices Scalia, Alito, and Thomas. And that there are occasions, and I think the Obamacare case was one of them, where in this year, conservative activists pushed the envelope pretty far, and they just weren't buying it. And in fact, the opinion that Chief Justice Roberts wrote for the six-member majority in the Obamacare case is probably the best explanation of Obamacare, how it works, and why it was enacted the way it was enacted. That I've seen. It's better than what President Obama says. It's more clear. He spent a lot of time making it clear and saying that the overall purpose of the act was clear, and that just because the drafting wasn't perfect in a couple of words, they weren't going to undo the act. The idea that Congress had in enacting this law was to make this health care reform workable, not unworkable. And so, although I have no doubt that Chief Justice Roberts would never have voted for Obamacare, that he doesn't particularly like it, his view is that you should defer as much as possible to the legislature. Now, of course, he is not subscribed to that view when the court struck down a key provision of the Voting Rights Act, and not this term, but a couple of terms ago, or in the Citizens United case, where the court struck down by a 5-4 vote, the five conservatives, essentially 100 years of understandings about how Congress can regulate elections.
Well, Nina, we just have a couple minutes here, but I'd love to ask you something our listeners asked. We had you on recently talking about the inner workings of the court. A lot of people thought that the justices purposefully waited till the end for the big decisions. You explained that, no, they heard the sides months ago, and they've been writing ever since, and sometimes they change their minds as they write. You explained that. But a lot of people asked, why are there no leaks? Why is that, if they've been working for so many months on these decisions?
Well, because it's a different kind of institution than the other two. It is avowedly not a political institution. And although members of the court undoubtedly have political views and ideological views, you can't do your work if you think that these genuine ideological and legal differences can't be resolved among you. And it's a very small place. You know, there are 9 justices. By and large, they have 3 or 4 clerks and a secretary or 2. And that's pretty much it. And those people are, if you were to be a law clerk and leak, you'd be ruined. Besides everything else. They're very conscious of secrecy. They're very, when they meet to discuss their opinions and to vote on cases, there are only the 9 of them. And their first loyalty is to each other in that sense and to the institution of the Supreme Court of the United States. And just imagine if in a financial case there were a leak that allowed somebody to make millions or billions
of
dollars. So they just don't do that. Yes, they don't do that.
Yeah.
NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg wrapping up the Supreme Court's term with us. Nina, we'll see you next time, next term, next fall.
Or maybe before.
Maybe before. Thanks so much.
Thank you.